Hello and welcome to the Great Lakes Analytics and Sports Conference Sports Analytics Podcast. I'm Scott Tappa, Director of the Conference, and I'd like to invite you to attend our event Thursday, July 13th at the University of Wisconsin-Stevens Point. We have a fantastic speaker lineup taking shape. Please visit www.uwsp.edu/analyticsconference to learn more. Today I'm speaking with one of our speakers, Eric Eager. Eric is an assistant professor of mathematics and statistics at the University of Wisconsin-La Crosse and an analyst for Pro Football Focus at the Great Lakes Analytics and Sports Conference. Eric will deliver a talk titled Various Ways of Ranking NFL Teams and Their Abilities to Predict Games. Eric, welcome.
Hey, how are you?
I'm great. Like you said, just staying warm over here in the central part of the state, much like you over in the western part of the state. So why don't we start by you telling me about your background. How did you end up in the area of academia you ended up in, and in what way did that translate over into sports analytics?
So I was, like a lot of people who end up in sports, I played when I was a kid, baseball, basketball, football, couldn't hit off-speed pitches, so ran track in high school, and just sort of always enamored with the way that we, quantify the game. And, so it wasn't so much for football, but like in baseball and basketball, I'm pretty sure I could tell you sort of like all my statistics growing up, which is kind of annoying, if you're trying to be my friend, but, kind of got me into mathematics. And so then when I went to college, I played tight end at the Minnesota State University Moorhead. And it was a pretty fun experience. And, majoring in math, it was really cool to sort of like, dive into things, not just sports wise. And towards the end of my career, I could sort of see that sports weren't going to be, playing sports. I was just so much better at doing math than playing sports. And so then I decided to graduate early and go to grad school in math. And I sort of dove into the academic career more than anything, and ended up getting a PhD in mathematical biology. And from there, I got a job at UWL. And over the, over the last, few years, I've still continued to do research in applied math and mathematical biology. But I really got interested in football analytics, and Pro Football Focus has kind of been one of the leaders around the world in that. So I kind of got latched on to them. And there's just so many really interesting questions to be answered there. So it's been pretty fun to kind of merge the academic life with also the sort of consulting life.
Great. So I do want to talk a little bit with you later about PFF, but before we do that, I wanted to get to a question. When I was first researching you, and I found a story in the Chicago Tribune about the work that you did with your brother-in-law, Zach, a high school basketball coach down in the Chicagoland area. I don't know why I just found that so compelling, but tell me a little bit about that experience, how it came about, what you did, and what were the results?
Yeah, interesting. So I went to high school with Zach, and then he and I ended up sort of, I guess, marrying into the same family. So it was kind of fun. He coaches a high school basketball team I think it was his second year as a high school basketball coach. Like three or four of his players ended up having to, I think that they were suspended or something like that. And he had almost, no players kind of to work with. And so he was trying to see if he could, win, some more games based upon just kind of being smarter than everybody. And so I proposed a few different ways in which he could sort of optimize some of the things that he was doing. And it's very much similar to kind of like in the NBA now, teams are shooting fewer, mid-range jump shots because those plays are just not as efficient as plays near the basket or play, three-point shots. Just kind of showing him like, I know that there was, and I'm not going to mention the players, but I do some plus-minus analysis for him. And I was just like, if you played this person as many minutes as you played this person, you would get an extra 2 points per game. During the course, per game over the course of the next like six games, and your point differential this season is about 2 points in the negative. So you go up to being a .500 team just by this one switch, and just kind of things like that. And I mean, it's really simple because, you know, we don't have, I don't have resources to like look at other teams in his conference or whatever. So it's very introspective in terms of that. I think it has helped him, and it's just been kind of fun to kind of help him out and sort of help his, you know, career and those kinds of things.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. So back to what we were going to talk about before, the Pro Football Focus, how'd you get hooked up with them? Were you writing independently? Do you have an in there? How'd that partnership come about?
PFF is a really interesting group because even like, so if you follow some of the senior analysts in the group, like the Steve Palazzolos and the Sam Monsons, they all kind of started out in the same place too, where PFF started by just gathering different data than everybody else. So trying to grade every player on every play. And that's a hugely human, labor intensive process. And so about 2 years ago, they had a call for people to kind of do stuff like this. And I was, I was growing a little bit, hopefully the right people listen to this, but I was growing a little bit bored with some of the things that I was doing on a daily basis in some of my research. And so I just was looking for something new. And so I started out at kind of the very front end with them. And then relatively early on, I started writing articles for them. And I think they're a great company in the sense that if you show yourself to be valuable, they give you opportunities. And so last year I wrote an article every week picking games against the spread. And I think this year we're diving in, we're sort of growing a kind of a heavy duty analytics group with some of the people in the company. So that's been really fun. We're diving into some really interesting questions.
So how do you, how's it determined what you write about? Is that assigned by editors? Do you follow your own area of interest? How do you do it with them?
A little bit of both. So if I see something, so I write for the Kansas City Chiefs and I'm also kind of a fan. And so when Harrison Smith signed a big time contract for the Vikings last summer and Eric Berry had, he was on the franchise tag. I was like, hey, can I write an article about sort of like what he's worth and that kind of thing. And that was, you know, that was an important, sort of diving into our data to try to see, to extract value from it. And then there's other things that are just assigned. So every once in a while, you know, like, hey, we need a season preview for every single team. And again, our value is we can add a unique perspective to all of those, arguments. Mm-hmm. And so we're what is the highest graded, free agent left tackle, what is the highest graded free agent acquisition for the Chiefs, that kind of thing.
Okay. You ever meet Chris Collinsworth?
You know, I visited PFF for an analytics summit in February and I was two floors up and I missed meeting him. And it was really a miscommunication because a friend I have in the company, was like, hey, we'll come up, he'd like to meet you. And then, like 10 minutes later, I didn't realize that what floor we were all supposed to be on. So maybe next time I visit PFF, yeah, I'll get to meet him. But he's been a tremendous, I mean, he's really the straw that stirs the drink at this point.
Yeah, and his affiliation with NBC Sports, and I don't know exactly, what drives it, but the inclusion of the player rankings and those types of things on their broadcast, it seems to be bringing PFF's work to a much broader audience maybe. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I would say so. I think I have friends and family who would say, I didn't know that you worked for them, that kind of thing. You know, when they knew I was working on some, trying to use math to understand football, and they didn't realize that it was sort of with these guys. And yeah, I think PFF generated a substantial amount of credibility when it came out that the Giants were using our data. They were sort of our first client, and then they won the Super Bowl against the Patriots in 2011. And then when we started getting more clients, and then in 2014 when Chris bought the company, I think that kind of shot everything up to a level. And now that we do games live, so we grade NFL games live and tweet stuff out about games that are currently going on, I think that has really elevated our mark as well.
Okay. So you do some radio work, right, with a station out of the Twin Cities, is that correct?
Yeah, I've guessed it on a few of their podcasts. There's a gentleman named Matthew Collar who is a he's a pretty big analytics kind of writer. He was mostly about hockey, and then he came in and to the Twin Cities and started covering the Vikings. And so he and I I've guessed it on a few of his podcasts. And then there's also a podcast for Vikings fans called Purple for the Win, and that's a pretty cool Andy Carlson hosts that, and it's pretty fun to just kind of try to communicate these things to folks.
Well, and that's what I was going to ask. I mean, when you're communicating to a more general audience, you know, a general sports radio audience, you know, hey, I love the Vikings, but I'm not a mathematician. I don't understand advanced stats. What kind of a challenge is that for you to communicate these new maybe technical thoughts and findings that you're coming up with to a larger audience?
Yeah, and I think a lot of it is just interpretation. So we went at PFF, we had the plus minus grades, and we changed those to a 0 through 100 grade for every player to try to give the fan maybe a little bit more of an interpretation of what like a plus 17 for a left guard is. And then I think now one of the things that we're working on is trying to develop a wins above replacement or a wins above average model. So you can really say like, okay, how many wins above average is Tom Brady? You know, it's something like 3 wins above average, right? Or how many wins below average is Brock Osweiler? That's like 2 wins below average, right? So you can actually say like what is the impact of having an all-pro left guard? It's about 3/4 of a win above average, you know, so that kind of thing, as opposed to just kind of, you know, saying, this guy's a 17.5. Like, I think that's really an issue when you don't define terms, you don't try to live on the playing field that the audience is at, you get into some issues.
Well, and I imagine too, you know, it's a context thing, right? I mean, with statistics these days, I mean, everybody's used to, you know, rushing yards or passer rating or, you know, sacks number, you know, those raw box score stats. But these advanced ones are not familiar with. There's very little basis for comparison historically. So it's kind of on you to define that as you go along too, right?
That's right. And it was that way, I think, in one of the biggest revelations I had, you know, just kind of being a baseball fan over the course of, you know, kind of when I was studying for my PhD, and, you know, you have people on ESPN say stuff like, oh, you know, this is some really wonked out metric that we're using to define, you know, a batter's value. And it's just like, well, no, you're just taking his weighted on base percentage. You know what I mean? And I think like that interpretation gap is huge. Like, you make analytics look impenetrable when it's not really all that impenetrable, you know, and the onus is not necessarily on the people, you know, on ESPN doing the games. It's the onus is on the analytics people to project it better to the public.
Sure. So any burning questions or topics you are looking forward to pursuing here, either for PFF or elsewhere in the next few years?
Yeah, we're really working right now to try to understand how quarterback composition, how the makeup of a quarterback's performance influences how his career will go. So you can imagine we have 2 different quarterbacks with like the same grade in our system. So let's say like Sam Bradford and Jameis Winston are both kind of like in the low 80s in our system for what that's worth. But if you watched if you watch those 2 players play, you know that Sam Bradford is kind of a slightly above average quarterback by, you know, not making a ton of mistakes and not making a ton of big throws. Whereas Jameis Winston's a guy who's going down the field a lot, and so he's making throws that are interceptable sometimes, but he's also making big plays, right? So those 2 are the same quarterback on average, but their composition is totally different. And so then what kind of quarterbacks have the high, you know, what kind of quarterbacks can you win with? If, you know, and so even digging into that, like, we give you guys 1 number for a grade, but there's so much packed into that, and there's so much squished down into that, you know, you kind of want to dig a little bit deeper. And I think that that's really one of the things that we're trying to figure out now, is that, you know, we're really trying to put context around some of our grades. And that's a big deal. And then always just trying to develop a metric for something like wins above replacement or wins above average. Like, we're really beta testing a lot of things now, but that can really sort of open the door, I think, for, you know, giving teams, you know, our team clients some better information to try to contextualize what we're giving them in terms of our grades.
All right. Well, good luck with those pursuits. Talking about our conference in particular here, the title of your talk again is Various Ways of Ranking NFL Teams and Their Abilities to Predict Games. Can you give us a little bit of an overview of what we might expect to hear during your talk?
Yeah. So, you know, there's as many rankings as there are teams, it seems like, right? And you can, and so, you know, one of the things that I think is, you know, with PFF's data being as unique as it is, you can take all the different types of ranking algorithms that there are. So like Massey or Elo or things like that, and you can apply, PFF data and see if those rankings give you a better idea of who's good and who's not. So I always think about like the Detroit Lions last year, who got off to a 9-4 start, and 8 of those wins were fourth quarter comeback wins, you know, and they, from almost all the metrics, PFF or not, were one of the worst defenses in the NFL, but they still were 9-4. Right. And so then, you know, you look at all like the ELO ratings and you look at just like win loss, you know, massive, you know, points for and against. They're one of the better teams in the league. But if you look at like the player level grade data, they're not that great. And then, of course, they lose 3 straight to end the season, and then they get kicked out of the playoffs relatively convincingly in Seattle. And so that kind of thing. Can we look at teams that are, or teams that are good, but their record doesn't indicate that? So last year, a team was like Carolina, where I think for 5 out of 6 games in the middle of the year, their games were all decided by 3 points. And so, you know, in a league with only 16 games, and where a win is, you know, you don't get 75% of a win if you lose by 3. You get 0 wins and 1 loss. So a team like Carolina, you know, is 6-10, 7-9, where they really played like a 9-7, 10-6 team. And so then the question then becomes, when you approach the offseason as a team like that, do you act as though you're a 6-10 team, rebuild a little bit, or do you act like a 9-7 team and reload a little bit? And so all of those kinds of things are important, I think, when you're trying to run a team. And ranking can really help you because, you know, as much, you know, you're only as good as your environment. So, you know, if you think you're a really good team, but you're the 32nd best team in the NFL, then it doesn't really matter, you know, because you got to face those other teams on a weekly basis. So that's kind of really where, you know, we kind of trying to look at different ways in which we can rank teams, where they differ, where they don't, which are the best at predicting, you know, games against the spread or who will win a game, those kinds of things. That's really what I want to talk about in my talk, and sort of spinning the PFF flavor into it using our grade level data to hopefully convert a few people over to the dark side.
Sounds interesting. Never quite as simple as just what the team's record is. Who is that? They are who we said they are. Was that Dennis Green? You know, it's never quite that. They are who we thought they were. Is that?
Yeah, that's right.
Not quite that simple sometimes, right? But
that's true.
So you came about your entry into the sports analytics world from one way. What advice would you give to somebody thinking about doing the same?
Right. I think it really does go back to, you know, when I was in grad school learning about sabermetrics, and I was reading up and I said, you know, if I just learn enough math, I think this is really going to serve me okay. And I think that theorem has not really been falsified yet. So I know as much football as some of the people who study the NFL, especially within PFF, but also I know that there are some other people at the conference who know X's and O's better than me. No, but if you know enough mathematics, I think you know, if you have enough tools, your ability to be valuable is substantial, because there have been numerous times where, you know, there's somebody that's like, well, I want to know this about quarterbacks, but I don't know how to take this big data set and really squeeze, you know, meaning out of it. And so having that mathematical background is substantial. And then, of course, second to that is you really do need to know content. You know, so as a mathematical biologist, I had to understand ecology really well in order to do a good job. That was secondary to the math, but it was certainly important. For football, I really do need to know the difference between, you know, a team that plays, you know, team that plays nickel, you know, 50% of the time, and a team that plays dime 45% of the time. Like, what kind of tendencies do they have? What kind of personnel groupings elicit, you know, different types of strengths and weaknesses of a defense? You know, how do teams value players in that context? That sort of thing. You know, so I do need to know the differences between, you know, various schemes and that kind of thing. But I don't need to be the best expert at it because I know math. You know, that's kind of the niche. I would say, you know, if in that context, learn math, learn data science, that kind of thing, that'll give you the tool set to, you know, and then you can transfer sports, you can go into business, those kinds of things. But there's so much flexibility there that I think it's substantial to do that.
Good advice. Good advice. Eric, where can people read you online or find out more about your work, and where can they follow you on social media?
So if you go to PFF_EricEager on Twitter, that's my Twitter account. And then from there, you can kind of find my faculty webpage and that kind of thing. And just hit me up on Twitter. Usually I will engage in conversations with people about sports, because that's fun.
Anybody engaging with you on LaCroix?
That's currently what's going on right now at this point.